Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, before we get the show started, I wanted to let you know we are giving away a bunch of brand new Black Magic gear.
Yeah, cameras, switchers, DaVinci Resolve licenses, a bunch of awesome stuff. So stay tuned to learn how you can enter to win free gear from Black Magic, and we're going to tell you all about it later on in this episode. Now cue the music.
Hey, welcome to the 83rd episode of Just Shoot It, a podcast about filmmaking, storytelling, and directing. I'm Matt Enloe.
And I'm Oren Kaplan, and today we have Paul J. Briganti back on the podcast, and he has done so much since we last talked to him. He's directed a bunch of TV, he directed a movie in Nicaragua, and potentially most interestingly, he is the staff director for Saturday Night Live. He directs the short films that you see live on the show, and on our podcast, we're going to go through all of it. We're going to learn about how you get to direct a TV pilot, what directing network TV is like, what making a movie in Nicaragua is like. And then we finish off the conversation by talking about SNL and how you can get a script on Wednesday and have an awesome, amazing video airing across the world
live
by Saturday.
New York, Saturday night. Yeah, I think it's great because as a pretty avid SNL fan, you get a lot about how they write the show and how, you know, dress rehearsal works and how they cast the show and what the cast perspective is like. But you don't get a ton of information about what it takes to direct all of those pre-taped packages. And so, you know, there are things that you could predict, but there's also plenty of surprises. So it was a really great episode, a great conversation.
Yeah, I learned a ton, and hopefully you guys will too. And we're going to skip our catch-up because there's so much good stuff.
Get ready for Paul Briganti. Is that good?
Yeah. No, all right. Okay. Okay. Here's Paul.
All right.
Hi.
Hey, man.
Hello.
Thanks for coming back.
Thanks for having me back. I'm happy to be back here. Thank you.
Yeah, I think you might have the biggest spread of episodes. You're on episode 21 and 83.
Yeah, yeah.
62 episode spread.
Wow.
Yeah, that's a big one. I think it was like 2 years ago or something, right?
Yeah. Maybe? If we have Avi on, he was our first guest, so he'll beat you.
Oh, yeah.
So we'll try to not have him on.
please don't. Just don't do it. Thanks. Yeah, thank you.
Well, so you've done so much stuff since we last talked to you. You're saying it was 2 years ago?
I think so. It was when I was working on Adam Earns Everything.
Right.
And I think that was 2 years ago, maybe.
Oh, you know what? Yeah, it was Adam Earns
right
Everything
after.
And the Middle of the Night Show.
Yeah.
Like kind of like you had that double whammy going.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, it's a shame that your career has taken a nosedive since then.
Yeah.
Just kidding. Paul, tell us, what have you been up to? What's the cliff notes?
So right now I work at Saturday Night Live. I do the shorts on the show, like the short films. Before that I did like, or in between the last time and now I did some pilots and like episodic stuff, but mainly just that this is my second year at SNL and it's like been pretty much just that for a while.
So you shot some TV shows and also you did a feature.
Oh yeah, I did a feature. Yeah, yeah.
And directing on
Nicaragua.
A blip
on
your
radar.
Yeah. Well, no.
Because it was like a Home Alone moment. You accidentally bumped into the ticket taker, flew to Nicaragua.
Yeah. Yeah.
You couldn't escape unless you made a movie.
Yeah, it was weird that the stipulations lined perfectly with what I wanted to do.
Look, Kevin wanted a cheese pizza. You wanted to make a movie.
Yeah. So I think that's kind of the Cliff Note version of everything since being here.
And so the pilot, so you've done, how many pilots did you shoot?
I did one for NBC and then one for MTV. So two.
Okay. And then
after
they didn't get picked up?
No, they didn't get picked up. But they were awesome. They were really fun. They were like the best time ever.
And who brought you, like, how'd you get that job?
The NBC one was kind of a weird, entangled way of getting it. Like, I did the, it was written by Cassie Miller, who's she was like a UCB person. Now she works at, she was at College Humor for a while. And now she writes
just,
on.
Just for a minute, right?
Yeah, a couple months.
Yeah.
And she's on Last Man on Earth now. She's writing on that.
Oh, cool.
She's great. And she had written this pilot presentation, and I directed it for this, like, NBC. It wasn't like a contest, but it was
like an incubator, right?
Yeah, it was like some kind of incubator where they...
Was it what Melissa Hunter did?
Yeah. She was like one of the finalists.
Wolf Girl.
Yeah, Wolf Girl. Yeah. So I did one of those with her, and then hers, like, won. And then I wasn't expecting to work on the pilot because I don't know, just doing a pilot presentation for NBC and then, like, getting able to do the pilot is vastly different things.
Right.
But she kind of, to her credit, like, helped me get it and, like, kind of stuck up for me and brought me in as a director of it, which was so cool.
To be fair, you were also doing television for
two
other networks.
That's
at
true.
The same
I think,
time.
So
it
was
wasn't
definitely,
like, my friend from college.
Yeah, that's true. I think it was like for sure a huge step up for me, but I think it was sellable, and luckily mm-hmm. she like did that for me. Which
you kind of
cool.
have to have that combination of a resume and the credibility and then the connection.
And the connection and like the working relationship and stuff.
Do you know what she said to the showrunner or the network
to
sell
know.
You?
I don't know. I think she sold me to the producers, and I think they really liked the presentation. Mm-hmm. I think that was a really easy like selling point. They were like, we really like this presentation. Who did it? And then, I think they sold me to the network. I don't mm-hmm. really know if that's what happened, because obviously I wasn't part of those conversations for good reasons, but that's what I suspect happened.
Right.
And was the presentation a similar script to the actual pilot?
Yeah. It was pretty much like the first half of the actual pilot.
But for way less money than you
yeah,
had.
I think it was like maybe a tenth or less of what the budget of the pilot was. But it was interesting because the presentation was like made in New York, because it was set in New York. But then like the pilot was like made in L.A. and like a backlot, but like it was for New York and like didn't.
Was it the Universal backlot?
Yeah. So there was like the fire hydrants and the hot dog man or whatever that like looks good. But when you actually see like New York and the miles and miles of like depth that it has and all the lights and background people in it, it's so different,
right? Like the brownstones at Universal, if you turn around, it's like
they're in like every movie and TV show. But it was cool. It was a cool experience. I had an amazing experience doing that. So I went from Adam Ruins Everything to doing that pilot, which was a big jump, but it was really helpful to have like a whole summer of just like nonstop directing, so I could kind of like move into that and understand the dynamics of like a show and a pilot.
Right. Because at that point you'd been staff at College Humor. So like you kind of jumped off the deep end.
Yeah. I don't think I could have gone.
But you had done Adam
College
Ruins
Humor.
Everything.
Yeah.
And the pilot for that.
And the pilot for Adam Ruins Everything. Yeah. And the couple episodes of it. And then like the middle of the night show. So I think if I went straight from College Humor to this experience, I think I wouldn't have really known fully the trappings and the ways to figure it out.
Right.
So I was lucky that I had that experience of doing those shows, which I had like an awesome time doing.
And then the MTV show was a different
MTV show is a pilot called Pick Me Up. is with I know, right? That's kind of a funny name for it. Is
caters to network executives, I guess.
Yeah. I guess it. Yeah. But it was written by written by Doug Mann and Dan Greger and starring John Gabris and Betsy Sodaro.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, it was really awesome.
That's right. We have talked about this.
Yeah.
They're like so funny.
They're so funny. And the show is so funny. And the concept of that was there's like a brother and sister Uber drivers. So they are just like complete messes and very slapstick, big personalities. But it's very sweet. Like the pilot plot was like John Gabers wants to find love because he's like, he's in love with this like mechanic lady, and the sister is like trying to help him do it. And it's just this very like sweet comedy of errors kind of thing. That we had a coyote on the shoot, which was crazy.
Cool.
It was like a low budget pilot, so that was not something that I thought we would do. And we did it. And
sometimes it's easier cool. just to get the weird animal, right?
That's true. Yeah. Sometimes I think the animal trainers are like kind of have this weird excitement about yeah. bringing out the weird thing.
Yeah.
It's
totally.
Not very yeah. often that that happens.
Yeah. Matt shot with a sloth recently.
I shot with three sloths.
Oh, I've
oh, three.
I would love to do that. What was that like?
It's weird. You're like, oh man, this sloth can actually like it yeah. could bite you real bad.
Yeah, I heard they're like a little violent when yeah. they're scared or something. Yeah, yeah. Right?
They're pretty mellow. They mostly just sleep, so you kind of only get like 20-minute increments with them. It's kind of like working with like a newborn, I imagine.
Yeah.
Well, the nice thing about the sloth was that it was just a sloth doing sloth stuff.
Like, yeah,
you
yeah,
can't
yeah.
train them at
like,
all.
Yeah, yeah.
You
yeah.
can kind of like put them.
It wasn't dancing, or
yeah, yeah, yeah. But yeah, we had like puppet arms so that we could kind of like put the sloth
the
in the background
in.
And then
yeah,
let the
yeah,
arms
that's
do the
funny.
Thing.
Yeah, that's cool. So it was like kind of silly.
Yeah, it was yeah, real, yeah, real yeah. silly.
That's fun.
But there's like kind of one famous sloth.
Right.
And yeah. her name is Lola. She's a real sweetheart.
Yeah. But the, how are the trainers? Were they?
Oh, fine.
They
yeah.
were fine. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
That's good.
Yeah. Animal trainers, you just need to show them respect and then they're like,
yeah, yeah.
into it.
Yeah.
Know?
Yeah. I would sort of agree with that. I think like for the most part, that's true. The coyote person was a little.
They're weird.
Tricky.
They're weird people. Yeah.
Yeah. Or just like making, there were some times when they were like making up rules on the shoe as it was happening.
Mm.
Like she would just be like, well, the coyote saw this camera or something. Like it can't, it needs to go away.
And only
like,
looks
what?
At, only Alexa's. No
yeah.
red on
yeah.
this set.
Like they were just things that like weren't fully discussed in the beginning. And then mm-hmm. I would just be like, well, we didn't really, I didn't know that was a thing until now. So there's a lot of like, A lot of that stuff that was just like not my favorite thing to deal with,
right.
but like I dealt with it fine.
Well, and there's a big difference between an animal that's trainable and an animal that isn't.
Yeah,
because
coyote, there's nothing you can do.
Yeah,
they're just
like
they're actually for the most part it was terrified. Like it was mm-hmm. like so afraid of everything.
Yeah,
you know, any sound it would mm-hmm. freak out at.
Sure.
It's not used to being around people.
Was it during the day?
Yeah, yeah.
Exterior.
There was one day exterior, one day interior, one night exterior, and I think that was it, yeah.
They're usually doing most of their stuff at night, right?
Yeah. But it's just like film lights everywhere, and it's just like looking
sure.
around. And
also, Gabrus and Betsy are like gregarious yeah. people, so they're just
yeah.
cracking everyone up.
Right,
and, yeah.
right. And as like the director, you want to push it, and you want to have like a shot where their like shoulders are in it or something. And,
mm-hmm.
yeah. Just to piggyback on that for a second, just craft wise, why do you think it's important to have like their shoulder in a shot of a camera?
Oh, well, just because I think sometimes when you're watching something like that, like some crazy thing happening in it, I think what I always think is I want to like see the person in the shot with them. So it's not clearly like a comped thing or something. Like I just think it's really important that you get like at least one shot where like they interact with it or something, just so you're like, holy shit, they like actually.
That's a real coyote.
Yeah, that's yeah. a real coyote. They're yeah. in this with them. Just so that it subconsciously doesn't, it's not all cutaways. Cause mm-hmm. there was a lot of stuff in the pilot that were just like close ups of the coyote. And then the reverse, we put some like fur thing in the foreground. But then I think it's important to like show like a handheld dirty shot of like the coyote with the people like in the foreground. And then you like go back to the coyote. I think it works on a subconscious level that you're like, oh wow. It actually at one point they were there with the coyote.
So you think a viewer that is not, does not work in film is, would feel that.
I think so. Yeah.
yeah.
I don't think it works on a conscious level. I think even most of the time, I don't even notice, but I think subconsciously it's like, it affects people.
And so for yeah. our listeners, if you, I've never directed a TV pilot, but if you direct a TV pilot and the show gets picked up, you get paid like on every episode, right?
Typically, yeah. If it's a union, if it's like a DGA thing, which is awesome and like weird and crazy. I don't know. It's a cool thing.
Right. Cause so, you're setting up the look
yeah,
and
that's
feel
true. I guess
you're
it does
in
that,
casting.
Yeah. Same
you know?
As, yeah. I guess same as like the creator or whatever gets like the same. Right.
right? Yeah.
Do you get residuals if an episode you directed airs?
Yeah. Yeah. I think so.
Do you get residuals if an SNL episode that has your video in it airs? Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. Actually, my first year, I asked the same question just like casually, like one of the other directors. I was like, do we get this? And he's like, yeah. Like he was just like, yeah, yeah. He's like, you should look into this. And I was like, yeah, maybe I should. Because like, I don't know.
You're so used to just like, I made a video for the internet. I made my $200.
Yeah.
And,
Yeah.
Oh, you guys are getting double scale now.
Like even Adam Ruins Everything was when the pilot was non-union.
Right.
So, and Middle of the Night Show, because I just wasn't union, you know, I just wanted to make a pilot, so I didn't care, and I still don't really care about, you know, it was just like, I was happy to do it to make a pilot.
Right.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing like that, like residuals, because it's weird to me that like certain professions get it and certain ones don't. Like, I feel like editing, there's an argument to be made for like that.
They don't get anything, right?
Yeah, they don't get any residuals or anything like that.
And composers make a ton of money.
Yeah, composers, they get like all these things,
I worked with a guy, he did the music for like Call of Duty or something.
Wow.
And he said he negotiated that he gets like half a cent or like a cent from every copy sold. And he was making hundreds of thousands of dollars a year just residuals. Okay, so you shot those two pilots, then you did your feature.
Yeah, then I made a feature in Nicaragua.
And how did that go? How's Nicaragua?
It was great. It was amazing, actually. It was like...
did you have any connections there?
It was weird that it happened. It just happened. Did I have any connections there? Sort of. Well, myself and John Cohen, who works... He's a producer at Adam Ruins Everything, and he like worked at College Humor for a while. We both went to this place in Nicaragua called Madero's Village, and it's like a very beautiful boutique-y resort. They're really nice down there, but it's like it has an air of like being very excited about itself, being like a cool place where like hot expats sort of move to and like surf all day and like don't do anything.
Isn't it like a Tulum like?
It's like that, yeah. That whole area of Nicaragua is not trendy, but there's this weird little pocket that's only owned by this one boutique resort, which I thought was really funny and really interesting, and it was also really beautiful. And I really wanted to make a movie just in general. Like I just felt like I really needed to. It just kind of inspired me to write this like very small story about these like brothers-in-law that like go down there in search of something. And
you wrote the script.
I co-wrote it with this guy Dan Schoenbrunn. Kind of came together really quickly. We did it for a super really really small budget. I was coming right off of that pilot, and from there I was coming right off of Adam Ruins Everything, so just working constantly.
Yeah, you've got a lot of momentum.
Seemed to come together quickly, and we were like, okay, let's go do it, and let's make it happen. And it did.
And who paid for it?
This guy who who I'm not related to, and he's a dude who's awesome, who wanted to support me somehow. Like he's a good friend. He has a lot of money and he's excited about movies and myself. So I think he does this for like some people. Like I've heard he invests in like podcasts and stuff. He just like gives money.
Go on.
he gives money, like low amounts of money to people that he thinks deserve it or thinks
he's a patron.
Like, yeah, exactly. He's like such one in a million type of person. He's not doing it for like a return necessarily, but he's doing it to like because he enjoys like watching creative people make things.
So he's quite wealthy then.
Yeah, wealthy enough
that like if
that he can do it. Yeah, for
if
sure.
your
yeah.
movie didn't make a single cent back, it wouldn't be like Paul, I lost my house.
Yeah.
And how many days did you shoot?
We shot like 17 days, maybe. Was not a lot, and also single camera, which was tough. That was the hardest part.
Did you miss shooting two cameras?
It really was such. It's such a luxury that I had gotten used to and relied on.
Do you think it's like a comedy thing, like the dual camera, or you just think no matter what you shoot, second camera is pretty essential?
I think it's kind of essential just because you can get twice as much stuff that you want.
Yeah,
right. But do you look like a Jean Genet or like these people with like Wes Anderson doesn't care for a second
camera? No, that's true. Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, I think it may be because Townies, we shot single camera on that. And I remember being surprised by page count. Like how quickly I could get through a scene. Because like it's, I wasn't intending to shoot like, oh, like crosses the whole time.
Yeah.
But when I did need to pick that stuff up, when I was in just dialogue where people were planted, you know, that's twice as much time that you need, basically.
Yeah,
and that,
yeah,
that was kind of a bummer.
There's kind of this weird mental thing where we would shoot a side of a scene and then we would move on to doing the other side of the scene. And I would just be like, oh, I thought we were done with that scene. Like, yeah. Yeah. You know, and it kind of tires the actors out, and it's right. Especially like super hot down there. And yeah, it's just time. Like you can explore things more,
right?
When you have two cameras, but it worked out luckily, and I you know came out good. I'm really happy with the results, and it's getting distributed, which is cool.
So cool. So did you had a festival premiere?
Yeah, we premiered at LA Film Festival. It was honestly the best. It was so much fun. The cast was there. It was good because it was in LA. So like,
having like an LA packed premiere. Is nice. Yeah. That's
because cool. Everyone who wanted to see it came. And like,
who was in the cast? Anyone cool?
Aya Cash from You're the Worst. George Basil, who's in like
everything.
Four shows right now. Yeah. He's on one of the shows he's on is called Wrecked. And it's,
right.
It was like shoots in Fiji. And they just like love him. And he's so funny. And we have a really close friendship. He was in a short that I made in like 2011. And then he's just been in like most of the things I've made ever since. Because he just has this way about him that's, he's like kind of weird, like off a little bit, but he's also very relatable somehow.
Yeah, super watchable. Yeah.
Yeah. He's like super smart, but also very silly.
Yeah.
And he's like kind of disappears into his character sometimes.
He really
like the
does.
Crashing character is like very different than.
Yeah.
But was he, did he do one of the Geico cavemen?
He was the, not the caveman. He was the, what the hell was he? He was in some, he was like the Bud Light guy.
Oh,
he was
like
the mayor.
Mayor of Bud Light Town. Right.
He did another big campaign where he wasn't the caveman, but he looked like the caveman. He was like this variety. I think it was a Verizon thing where he was like, you can get two phones or something. And he like had long scraggly hair and was like in New York. So everyone, I went to like Vegas with him and everyone just kept yelling caveman at him. Cause like it's a popular campaign.
Right.
Like the caveman. He looks like a caveman.
TV. Yeah. You got that vibe.
You could tell that they were like, they weren't really sure, but then they were like, yeah, he was caveman. So then they would just yell caveman.
I guess that's the best place to get yelled at for being like looking like a caveman.
Yeah.
Right? Like drunk bros are like, caveman.
Yeah. Like it was ridiculous. Like people would
don't throw
take
chips
photos
at me.
With him and stuff. Totally. And like,
and who is the DP?
This guy, Charlie Gruet, who, he actually works with me at SNL now.
Oh, cool.
And he did the Imaginary Friends presentation.
Which was the NBC show.
It's called Imaginary Friend. Sorry. But he did the presentation for that. And he's like a New York DP. And he's done High Maintenance, the HBO show.
Oh, sure.
Oh, yeah.
And he just did a pilot for Broadway Video for Comedy Central that just got picked up. I forget what it's called, but it was made by the old head writers of SNL.
Sarah Snyder.
Sarah Snyder, and Chris Kelly.
Cool.
So, so then we get to SNL.
Yeah.
We're skipping Crazy Ex-Girlfriend.
Yeah, I did an episode of Crazy Ex-Girlfriend.
I fucking love that show, man.
It's really good. Yeah, it's so good.
It's my wife's...
So funny.
Literally my wife's favorite piece of media.
It's really good.
Kind of period.
It's so good. It's like so... Such a... They do such a good job of like balancing the two tones of like... Just like weird stuff that I love. And then also like very mainstream, smart, like relationship stuff. Which I think... covers a lot of bases.
Yeah.
And they do it really well. It's done very like fluidly, I think.
And how did you get that job?
I got that through Rachel because I had known her in New York and we did a bunch of music videos together, like a bunch of her older music videos I directed for her and edited. I don't know. And then I just was like, hey, I would love to do your show.
So you reached
out
to
expecting.
Her.
I think so. And I think what happened was like a director just had dropped out or something. So it was an easy.
And you had already done a bunch of TV at this point.
I'd done a bunch of TV. I hadn't done any like network episodic stuff, but I'd done that NBC pilot. And I think that.
Yeah.
Maybe
that'll
got
seal
me.
The deal.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, again, it's another example of like have the right resume and then also the personal connection.
Yeah, that's true. So. That's a really good point. And luckily that worked out, and the timing worked out really well.
And so there, so I'm curious about like the musical stuff.
Yeah.
Did you, I mean, well, obviously we've done videos before and music before.
Yeah.
But do they have like any rules as to how you shoot music, like the musical
Not
numbers?
Really? Like, I think, you know, there's obviously a lot of rules for the narrative stuff because it's just what they've set up. The music videos are a little more just like have fun with it, which is cool. They have references, so that pushes the direction a little bit. Like one that I did, like the reference was like the "Oh Mickey, You're So Fine" mm-hmm. music video, but like that music video it's just like her in a white psych, like dancing around. So like we zhuzhed it up a little bit for now. And then the other one was like a big tap dance number that I actually didn't get to do because I had gone SNL and they had to push the tap dance number to like late the next month because one of the actors hurt his ankle or something. So then I couldn't do that other music video, which was like kind of a bummer because it was like a really big and fun music video.
And yeah. How involved are you in the choreography on something like that?
I mean, they have a choreographer, Catherine, who's awesome. And she pretty much like does it, but like collaborates with you a lot.
And so will she like suggest camera angles or things like
kind
that?
Of, yeah. Sort of in the way that I'll suggest like moves and stuff like that. Like she'll be like, maybe you can do that here and then you can go mm-hmm. over this way and get a cool angle on it. And I'll either be like, yeah or no or something. So, but it was very, very collaborative actually, especially the music videos.
Do you ever get cool. nervous? Like sometimes I get nervous if I'm talking to like a choreographer, but I don't know mm-hmm. a dance move. I'll yeah, be like, yeah, you know, just do like a leg
the kicky ball.
Like, yeah.
yeah. Do a little twirly swirly.
Yeah.
Here.
Yeah. I think I don't know dancing at all. And I don't know the terminology. So usually I'm just like, I don't know what to say, but bear with me or something. Especially when I feel like I'm like that whenever I'm working with someone who's knows what they're doing and I don't know what they're doing.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Just kind of give them the ownership of it. But she's great. I think she's been with the show since like season one. Yeah, it was really cool though. It was fun to work with Rachel again because I hadn't really worked with her since like those music videos like, you know, 8 or so years ago.
Yeah, like now you have a real
budget. It was fun. Yeah. It was like a fun... And she was really excited about it and like it's really nice like introducing me to everyone as like, you know.
Yeah, like oh, your old buddy.
Stuff. Yeah.
It is really nice when like you're in a high stress situation and then like an old friend
yeah.
who also yeah. has kind of yeah. really like leveled up, you know, it's like, oh, my yeah. friend is here and also they know what they're doing and they're yeah. here to help me.
yeah, what a
gift, you know.
It really is. Great. Yeah. It's a really helpful thing.
Yeah. None of my old friends leveled up.
business. That's not true. That's
I don't know. I feel like they probably do.
Well, so, okay. So SNL.
Yeah.
That
yeah.
was, so I saw you.
Yeah.
For a
you saw me at After Party there.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was fun.
And so you gave me like a little glimpse into like the insanity.
Yeah.
I want to know about how you got the job in the first place,
sure.
actually. Let's do the interview just real quick, the
yeah,
short version.
Yeah, oh,
I'm boring Oren already, I know.
So I was doing Adamer's Everything for the first season. Sarah Schneider, who was the head writer at SNL, and then before that she was at College Humor as a writer. I knew her from there. She emailed me and was like, hey, do you want me to put you on like a list for SNL? We might be looking for someone. And I was like, sure. And then I was in New York for the Middle of the Night show, and they called me and like the producers and stuff just to like face-to-face and mm-hmm. whatever and talk for like a half hour in the summer. And then I did.
And is Lorne Michaels one of these?
He wasn't in that room. No, it was like kind of everyone, all his people, like his like producer circle. A couple months later, they were like, hey, we want to have another meeting with you. If you can start on this date. They didn't offer it to me at all. But I had to say no because the date that the show would start would conflict with Adam Ruins Everything because I was doing 3 more episodes, doing the mm-hmm. last 3 episodes. So it's really hard to ultimately say no, but I did. And I was like, okay, whatever.
Did you consider telling Adam Ruins Everything now?
Yeah, for sure. You know, SNL is like a dream to like go there. Yeah, like I mean, growing up, yeah. I just like watched all the show, and especially in the last 15 years, like the films are so
right.
really well done. And as a director, I wanted to do that for many reasons. So it was really, really hard, but ultimately I had to say no to the potential gig of SNL. They hadn't even like offered it, but it was for like another meeting. And then, so a year passed and I did all these things, the pilot and stuff. And then they were like, hey, someone else just left. Like, are you interested? And I was like, yeah, of course. And then I didn't really think anything of it. And then like a month or so later, they called me to interview with Lorne in New York.
And you were here in L.A.?
I was here in L.A., so they fly you there.
They pay for the flight?
Yeah, yeah, they pay for the flight and, like, the hotel room and stuff. And honestly, at that point, I had a serious girlfriend, so it's like, I don't know. That's
and
a,
your career is going great. Yeah, like life I was doing is really stuff good. And, you're in
and,
L.A.
Yeah, and I was really happy and, like, doing a lot of things, so I wasn't totally sure about it. But then, like, once you go, you're like, oh, this is so cool. Like, and I just was excited to, like, take a meeting with him because, like, they're just, it's just a funny experience. And then I just, like, sat with him for 5 minutes, and it was, like, very casual.
What did he say? What did he ask you?
He was like, oh, so you work with Sarah or something? And I was like, yeah, yeah, I worked with her. And, like, Streeter Seidel, who's also a writer on the show, right, and he worked at College Humor. And he was like, yeah, 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 cool. And then he said something. He's like, well, directors here, like, we kind of like them to put their stamp on things and to really, like, push it and to be filmmakers. And I was like, oh, that's really cool. And he was like, okay, thanks for coming in. And then that was it. It was like literally a 5-minute meeting. If it was with anyone else, it would be like the worst meeting of my life. Just because it was. But I went in, like, knowing super well that, like, it was going to be quick and casual.
So how did you feel afterwards? Like, you
I
don't know.
Great.
If you,
I was just really? Like, that was okay. Funny. I honestly was just excited to, like, have a funny experience like that.
Right.
Where I had no expectations. And afterwards, I was like, okay, I'm just going to go home now. Then the day, I think I flew that the next morning or something. And then, like, they called me right afterwards and they were like, hey, we want you to do it. I was like, great, okay. So then, like, in a week,
totally changing.
Yeah.
You were engaged then, or?
I just got engaged, like, a couple months ago, but I was, like, you know, on the track.
Sure.
Your girlfriend at the time was living in L.A.
Yeah, yeah, she lives and works here in L.A., and, you know, before I left that first year, it was really hard, because we were, like, we didn't know what was going to happen.
Sure.
But I felt pretty confident that it would be fine, and it was fine. Like, nothing's really changed in our relationship. She's a producer, and we're pretty aware that hopefully we're going to be, like, traveling a lot for work and stuff in the next lifetime. So it was kind of a nice, like, sure, test of, like, if we can do this.
Can you do this? Yeah. I always, like, it's a circus family.
Yeah. Right? And it's kind of fun, actually. Like, it's kind of fun to just, like, she just found out yesterday she has to go to Montreal for, like, 2 days and mm-hmm. on Sunday and Monday. And I was like, oh, maybe I'll go with her, like, if I can. Like, that might be kind of fun. It's kind of fun. It's, like, unpredictable. And luckily, the SNL schedule is when there's a show, it's insane, and you're underwater. But right. then...
But the you, only you see, everyone knows.
Yeah, like, exactly. Hey,
there's
exactly.
a show this week,
yeah.
so...
Like, even if she lived with me in New York, like, I don't think I would even see her.
Yeah.
to get any valuable time with her. But when you're... The schedule is, like, they usually have 3 shows and then, like, 2 or 3 weeks off. So then I just come back here during the off time. And then sometimes she comes to shows as well.
That's cool. That's going to be fun.
Yeah.
Well, then let's dig in. Let's talk about the schedule now, right?
Sure. Yeah. 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 So
how many directors are there?
There's 3 directors, including me, of the short films. There's 1 director of the live show, this guy, right. Don. So there's two other directors, Oz Rodriguez and Dave McCary. I'm the newest one. So basically the way it works out.
Oz was Funny or Die.
Yeah, yeah,
that.
Yeah. Funny or Die. He came from Funny or Die.
And Dave McCrary's the...
Dave was a good neighbor. Yeah, yeah. So they're all still there. So it's like him and Kyle and Beck came in together mm-hmm. as it's like Good Neighbor unit to make like Good Neighbor style videos.
I kind of started with like the Lonely Island guys, right?
Yeah, yeah. They it's pretty cool. Like the whole, like as I'm learning more about like the whole history of like how it became what it is now. I think in the late 70s, there's this guy, Jim Signorelli, who was like the main film director, and he directed like everything until like the mid 2000s. Wow. He was there forever. Yeah. And right as right as the Lonely Island came in, he still did like film stuff, and the Lonely Island did like super bare bones, like
SNL
raw
shorts or
yeah, like the Laser Cats and stuff. And I think they were sort of separate. And then as the years went on, they came closer and closer together. And so now there's just this really strong film department there. But it's also has this very nimble side to it where mm-hmm. they can be edited on Premiere. You know, it's very like quick turnaround, but we can do really big things because there's the production like infrastructure to like to I support
think,
that.
Yeah. I think one of your editors was like touring the country, teaching people.
Oh, Adam. Yeah. I think he's done like South by Southwest like talks and stuff like that. Yeah. Adam.
Yeah. Like he shows
really
them how they basically they make a show it, ready for air in like a day.
He's amazing.
And and how it's funny and like what all the tricks, editing tricks are to like make things land.
He's incredible. Like he just sings in the amount of time that I don't know how he does it.
And you guys color everything in house and sound mix in-house.
No, color is outside. So basically on Saturdays, at like 10 in the morning, I go to the color house.
The morning of your show?
Yeah. And I sit with the DP and the colorist and we just set looks for every scene. And then at 11, I go to 30 Rock and we just edit. And they're constantly like sending the colorist like new EDLs, like as we're changing everything and like tracking shots later on. But we're editing it. Yeah. Like up until the last like 5 minutes or so that it airs. But the system for the color is pretty cool, but it's just not in-house because I just don't think they have the infrastructure for it.
Wait, so walk me through then, because you said you're editing up until the last minute.
Yeah.
But so then workflow wise, it's not, you're not then sending them an EDL and then they're spitting it out. And
no, usually the edits and the very, I mean, sometimes though, like things go to air that with like a shot that's like not colored or something.
Right.
You just have to like do your best. You just kind of fudge match it a little bit. But then.
And you get to fix it for the second airing for the West Coast airing?
If it's a big thing, yeah, then you can. Like if it's like a shot that wasn't colored, then for sure you can do that. So yeah, you're just like fixing things and on the fly. And
well, so let's rewind to days Monday.
Of the week.
When do you start?
Yeah, so I start on Monday. I do these promos. So they last year when I started, they were like, we want the promos to be like a little more elaborate or like cinematic or something. So it's kind of fun to like work with the producers there and like figuring out how to do that. Cause it used to just be like them sitting at like a table or something or like a park and say they're hosting and then like do a joke. And I think they have been doing that for a while and they just wanted to like ramp it up a little bit.
Yeah. I feel like now you'll even see promos getting shared, you know?
Yeah.
Like
yeah. Which is
like,
cool.
Oh, this is funny and weird, yeah. You know?
So then I kind of got the opportunity to like expand them and make them a little just bigger and more cater to who's hosting.
So you direct all of those?
I direct those promos. Yeah. Sometimes I write on them or like the writers also submit, but like the thing about the promos is like we shoot them on Tuesday and the writers are all, they don't come in until like 4 or 5 because they're basically up all night writing the show. So sometimes like hard to get writers to like engage a little bit on that stuff.
And it's the lowest stakes thing.
Yeah, right? Exactly. And it's like just it's a promo. So
okay, so it's like Monday, let's say it's the Gal Gadot episode.
Oh, Monday. So, okay, yeah. So Monday I get there on like 1 and then sometimes I go and like meet the host and like tell them what the promo is and like pitch it to them. And if they have like questions, answer them and like change it based on their suggestions. And then there's like a pitch meeting at like 5 where all the writers go into Lauren's office and like pitch ideas to the host that they have.
For the week.
For the week, yeah.
And all the directors are in there too?
The directors are there. Yeah, we just kind of stand and like, just because in case there's something we hear that could be a good video, could be a good pre-tape, and then like talk to them afterwards. Because sometimes they don't even write the stuff that they pitch. Mm-hmm. A lot of times it's just like a joke or something that like is just funny, but maybe won't work as a full thing they decide.
And when they're pitching, are they like, Kate McKinnon is doing this? Or are they just saying, and then this woman?
Usually it's just like, I had an idea where you're a bus driver and you're yelling at kids or something. Like, and that's kind of it. It's like pretty basic. It doesn't go too deep into it because there's like so many writers. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of them.
Yeah. It would be rude to be like, all right, picture this.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's just very casual.
New York City street.
Yeah.
So like what, like 20 writers?
I think around, yeah. And then me and the other directors and the music people and the producers are all like kind of just there. It's like a weird like welcome thing, I guess they do for the host. And then Tuesday we shoot the promo, usually in the studio.
Sorry, one more question about the writer's room. Is the host in every single sketch? They're usually not in the cold open, right?
Yeah, they're usually not in the cold open. And then I think it's rare for them to not be in like another sketch during the show. But sometimes like we do pre-tapes that don't have the host in it. Like I just did this one that was like a Safe Light commercial parody where didn't have the host in
it. That's the guy with the van?
Yeah. The guy who like replaces the windshield of a car.
He just keeps breaking it.
Yeah, because he's like really into this this woman and her daughter. So Tuesday, we shoot the promo. And it usually takes like two and a half hours. It's kind of fun because it's like the first thing that the host does. So me and this producer, Lindsay Shookus, she kind of like runs it. She's sort of the collaborator in these with me.
And how long are they? Like 15 seconds or 30s?
We make different versions of them. So there's a 15 second for air, and then there's whatever for web, usually like 45, 50 seconds. So we shoot it, and then we like, as we're shooting it, they like run up the footage as mm-hmm. we're doing it. And then the editor usually has a version of the 15 second one, like maybe a half hour after we're done shooting. And you like really quickly have to make that one, like approve that one, because mm-hmm. that one has to air in like 2 hours.
And a lot of them are like single shot, right?
No, not anymore. Like now those were like kind of the older ones when they like just do a stand up and they're like, hi, I'm hosting.
Yeah.
Now it's like, we just did this one with Kumail Nanjiani where he's like in the hallway of the studio and he's like acting all like badass. It's like a Pink song. And then like you slowly realize he's like lost. He like doesn't know where to go. And like he goes into like the makeup room. They're just like looking at him. And then it cuts like a hard cut to him like talking to a page. And he's like, I don't know where I am. And she's like helping him to like find the stage.
And that's in 15 seconds?
Yeah. Yeah. You just make a really abridged version of it pretty much.
And how are you like lighting things? And like, is it just kind of all natural? And
it's like lit. Yeah. Like when you shoot anything on the eighth floor, is where the studio is, you have to use the studio lighting people. They are just lighting that. And there's this DP, Jason, who has been doing them for a long time. He's the Good Neighbor DP.
Gotcha.
So it's like actually lit and it's like a real thing now, which is fun and cool. Yeah. But basically the promo is like the idea behind it is just like, usually it's like them getting off the elevator or something, or like them entering the studio mm-hmm. with like some sort of twist on it. Like the Gal Gadot one, she like breaks through the wall like Wonder Woman. Yeah, it's like them entering with some kind of twist on it.
And in terms of like writing, you said it's like the writers aren't super duper.
Well, they send pitches for them on like maybe Wednesday. And then on Saturday when I'm editing the piece, like just through email, we have to like kind of figure out what we're going to do mm-hmm. if it's the next week right after it. Sometimes Lindsay will be like, I think this might work better if we did it this way. It's a little more like malleable mm-hmm. just because it's coming together so fast.
Besides you two, who else is kind of like weighing in on which idea you should?
No, I don't think that's anybody. Kind of
like no one else is like, hey, Paul.
Yeah, no. Yeah. That's pretty much it. That's the thing about SNL that I've come to learn is just like, you have a lot of freedom just because like there's so much to do sometimes. Mm-hmm. No one's over your shoulder like questioning everything you're doing, but like there are checkpoints of just like you don't have to pitch things before you do them, but you have to answer them after you do them.
Right, right.
They give you kind of a long leash, right. And the longer you're there, the more they trust you, and the more they like let you kind of just do your thing.
Like there's not time to ask for permission.
No, yeah.
But also,
yeah.
You're the person who made the call.
Yeah, you made that call. And like, if they ask you to explain it, like, you should.
Yeah.
Or, you know, just cut the thing.
I thought it was funny.
Yeah.
So that's Tuesday. It's Tuesday night and you have your promos done.
Yeah. And usually I stay later with the editor making like a more elaborate like web promo, which I put up on Wednesday. And then Tuesday night, the writers are staying up all night and like writing.
What time do they get in though at Tuesday? You said like 4 or 5. Like
yeah, I think like any time between like 1 and like 9 or something. Yeah. I don't really know.
And everyone on the cast is also writing.
Yeah, they all write. Yeah, so they all have to stay up late too, and I don't do that. Which I'm thankful for.
That's so awesome. Yeah, there's always that old Larry David story about how like I turned in my sketches, I'm going home, mm-hmm. and everyone was like, "No, you can't. That's not."
I mean, I don't really know too much about that side of it, like the whole culture of like that night. Mm-hmm. But I think it's like you're supposed to stay there and like.
Yeah. It's part of the job.
Yeah.
No one's like, wait a minute, you have to stay up late and
work on SNL? Yeah. It's kind of part of the whole fun of it, I guess.
That's so excellent that you don't have to do that, though.
Yeah.
That has always been a thing that's very, obviously, I love the show, and it's so intimidating to the idea of like having to stay up late because I cannot do it.
Yeah.
I'll just be like, well, it's 10:30 and I'm going to fall asleep mid-sentence and I can't help it.
I think people
it.
Take like naps and stuff and then they wake up later.
Like no one's superhuman, right?
Mm-hmm. Okay, so now what? happens on Wednesday.
So on Wednesday, there's like a big table read that they have.
Who chooses which sketches get written at that first meeting?
Written?
Yeah.
Just the writers, really. They just write whatever they want to do.
Does each writer write like
three
sketches?
Yeah, I think they write like three or so, yeah. And then at like three or four, there's a table read where the host is in it and like Lauren's in it and all the producers and all the designers and hair people make everyone who would be affected by any of these sketches, isn't it?
So there's like 50 sketches or something.
Just 40, I think. Like maybe between 40 and 50. And then we just read through them. And
it's a cold read, like no one's read them before.
I think that the performers for sure, I think they do. Just because
well,
like, they
they're part
know.
Of the writing process too.
Yeah, yeah. Right. And I think the writers like kind of give them a little, it's this type of thing. You're preview. A karate teacher in this. Just be really high energy.
Sure,
or something.
Sure. Yeah.
And the writers are obviously hoping their sketches get picked.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the performers are hoping that they're in a sketch.
Yeah. 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 And like, I'm hoping that like a cool video goes well that I think is really cool because I want to. Like,
so are
do
you
that.
Are you assigned to a video at this point?
Not at this point. They send an email with like 10 or so of the like video pieces that could go, but just because like out of a table read there's usually like 10 or so mm-hmm. films that
you,
people write,
you can kind of just tell.
Yeah, they write like videotape at the top of it.
And is there a mandate, are you expected to do a certain number of pre-taped pieces per episode?
Just one. Yeah,
just one.
Usually,
but
one,
but like it's kind of an expectation.
Yeah. I've only gone 1 week without working on something, mm-hmm. and that was because it got canceled the week, like on Thursday or something, because it like was, it was against some brand and they got mad or something. Yeah, yeah. So,
and have you ever shot something that did not air?
Oh yeah. Yeah. I've done
so
that.
How many
times.
Do they air? Do they air two videos a week?
Usually three, but they've been known to cut things if they don't do well, or like the Safe Light thing. So that was a commercial parody. We shot that in the first week, the Ryan Gosling episode, mm-hmm. and it got cut. But they were like, we're going to bring this back because there's no host in it. And you kind of take it with a grain of salt. You're not sure if that's going to happen. But then it aired like the next week, which is great.
Right.
But then like other times things have just gotten cut and like never see the light of day, which is fine.
Do you get to keep them?
Do I get to keep them?
Yeah. Like if you
I guess
wanted
I could,
to show like, them to someone.
I guess I could like, yeah, well, I could like show it to someone. Yeah. But like a lot of times, like, I don't know if you like really want to, because you're just like, eh.
Yeah, you don't want to be like,
there's a reason why it gets cut.
Yeah,
like,
right.
No matter how much I want, I don't want it to.
Well, and there's the cut for air sort of.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I actually just had one of those.
Cut for time, I mean.
Pardon. Thrown up. Yeah, they just put one up that I did last week that the Britannic guys wrote. It was like a Beck thing. And it did well at Dress, but there's just no time for it, so they had to cut it. But that got put online, which is cool.
Do they have a hard time limit?
No, not really. It's just like however long it should be. Like if it's like a short film, usually around like 4 minutes. If it's like a commercial parody, like no mm-hmm. longer than two, I feel. But if it's really good, then they're fine.
And that's college and humor instincts right there too.
Yeah.
You know, you have a good sense of like, well, just cut all the fat, right?
And a lot of times in between Dress and Air, like you make changes because based on how the audience took it.
So how does a director get assigned to a video piece?
So after the table read, we like go back to our offices, and I think that the things that do well at the table, the producers kind of start like putting feelers out for locations and stuff, just mm-hmm. to like do a little bit of head start work, mm-hmm. even though it's really hard.
They're like texting their assistants.
We have a location guy, this guy Adam, who is great, and he's sort of like does we're all in communication with each other. Like this did pretty well. Like you might want to look into like mm-hmm. a castle or something.
Right. And he's got all of the scripts as well. So
he's got
the breakdown.
Yeah.
Already.
Yeah. Yeah. And then Oz, he like directs the biggest unit, the like main film unit.
Right.
So I think him and the producers like talk about what he wants to do.
So he calls dibs.
He's like,
Papyrus is mine.
I think because, you know, SNL is like a place that they like people who have been there for a while. Mm-hmm. And I think Oz is like really good. I think he's like deserved of it. I think like Lauren and the producers pick what they want to shoot. And then I think Oz and the producers like have a conversation over like who should do what. Mm-hmm. He sort of like creatively produces that or directs that, then they're just like, all right, you're doing this, Paul, Dave, you're doing this, Oz, you're doing this. And then it's kind of off to the races, like right at that moment.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
That's pretty wild, man.
So yeah. Now it's Wednesday night.
Wednesday night. It's like Wednesday at like 9.
And you have to shoot something that on airs
Friday.
On...
You have to shoot on Friday.
Oh, you shoot on Friday. So you have a day of prep.
Yeah. So when...
And is the cast already... assigned at this point?
Usually, like, they write the cast into the scripts, but sometimes you have to recast because of, like, scheduling things. Mm-hmm. But so, like, Wednesday at 9, after they choose a thing, all the department heads, like, come in to my office, and, like, the writers come in, and everyone just comes in, and we just, like, all talk about it and, like, ask questions. And
it's like a...
Like an hour. Yeah, like a prep meeting. Yeah, basically. And then it's a lot of Google image searching for, like, wigs and hair and stuff. Like the hair people are really cool. They throw really good stuff together very quickly.
They keep winning Emmys.
I know.
I mean, they deserve them. Like,
yeah.
I've been on so many of my sets when I've directed things. Yeah. And I'm like, why in 4 hours can you not make something that looks as good as what they do in 5 minutes?
It's kind of
crazy.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's kind of funny because, like, they put it together so quickly. Like, I was doing this, one piece with Benedict Cumberbatch. And there's a wig in it, and the AD, I think it was like maybe his first or second week starting with it. He still works with us now, but he's like, oh, we have like a wig thing. Like, that's going to take like at least an hour. And then like, it took like 10 minutes and he came in just looking amazing. Like just so fast.
Wait, is that the Benedict Cumberbatch one where he sits on a toilet cool?
No, that one's amazing though. Okay. That's the cool toilet.
Yeah.
Now I did this one with him and Pete Davidson. It's like this really dramatic scene where Benedict Cumberbatch is like a professor and he's like hitting on a student who's Pete. But it's like a very like heartfelt, like emotional love scene. But Pete just plays this like moron who just keeps saying, okay.
Yeah.
And then Benedict Cumberbatch has this like long monologue about the conflicting. You know, he's like marrying a woman, and then Pete's just like, cool. And he's just
is that the same character he did in Fantasy?
Yeah. It's been in a couple.
Did you direct that one too?
I did not do that one, no. But that character's come back a couple times. Yeah. And then Thursday morning, like around 9, we like do location scout, just drive to wherever and find the place.
And it's the same crew. You have the same crew
every
time. Same
crew every week. Yeah. Same unit. And then we scout, and then usually around like 1 or 1:30, there's like a rewrite table that I go to where like, the head writers are like rewrite it with them, and like you can say your piece isn't in
right, or say like, oh, this location has this great
escalator. Yeah. And then you like go with the writer and sort of like figure out what we're gonna go with. And now usually during the rewrite, I'm just like texting the producer, being like, this ice cream store is cut.
Sure, this is cut. Yeah.
Like this has changed into this.
Yeah,
which happens a lot.
It's like, not at a school anymore.
A lot of times, like, things get cut. Like, the last thing I did, there was, like, a whole hat store scene. And then, like, in the rewrite, they're like, let's just cut that. It seems, like, cumbersome. And then okay. And then I just, like, text the producer.
There's, like, 16 people who are, like, you were, like,
building
mind,
a hat
then.
Set. Yeah. Just things are shifting and changing always at the same time.
I guess you can't, at that pace, you can't take any of it personally, right? It's just like, this is the way it's happening. This is the job.
It's very much just like, okay. And then you just like move on and do the next thing that's pressing. It's a very like non-emotional environment, which is kind of nice because it's just no time to like do that really.
And so everything is a one-day shoot.
Yeah, usually like if it's a longer, it was like a really big thing, then you start like early in the morning. And I did one last year, it started at like 6 and didn't end until like 4 in the morning, the Saturday morning.
Right. And you've got performers. Not only do you have an edit to worry about, but you've got performers who have to be on live television.
Yeah.
In and like the less host. Than 24 hours.
Yeah. Like a lot of times, like when you're working with a host and it's like a really late shoot, like they're always cool about it, but they're just so exhausted. And I need you to like, fall on this pie or something. Like, I'm sorry.
And you shoot day, night, everything.
Yeah. Friday morning, Friday night. Sometimes if we're lucky, we can do things like a scene or something on Thursday, but we don't usually do that. And then Saturday, you're just editing all day.
But I'm assuming the editors are probably getting footage like Friday night.
Yeah. They're getting footage as it's coming in and they're editing scenes there's this like music video that I did that like went until like 5 in the morning that he didn't come in until like 6 in the morning just because there would be no point coming in earlier. He's great. I work with this dude, Jeremiah, who's like incredible. And he just, when I feel like editing is like the hardest thing, the hardest job on that show mm-hmm. for film stuff, because right. like, it's just nonstop from like
yeah. I mean, it's something that really should take, you know, days.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And that's what I learned about it, which I didn't ever realize before, is that it's not less work. It's just the same amount of like a month's worth of work, just like crammed into a week.
Into a week, yeah.
So editing, you just start at this place in the morning, and at the end, you're just like, how did we get here? Like right. you can't even like remember the steps because everything's just moving very quickly.
But do you ever feel like, if only we had another day to edit this, it would have been so much better?
Honestly, no. I don't really think that way. I feel like that's like not healthy to think that, because like sure. you don't have it. Yeah. Now, kind of my mindset is just like, all right, we got to do this. Let's do it right now yeah, and
next.
Move quickly.
Cool. Cut. Next.
Yeah, because yeah. I think like when you're editing normally, like there's just a pace that you go at because you know you have the time. Like if you don't have that time, you're going real fast.
Nobody's on Facebook.
No, you know? Yeah, there's right. no like.
But are you like looking, yeah. watching every take, or are you like, oh no, the last take was good.
Usually, what I do, I like to give him. So like after the shoot, on the ride, the cab ride like home or to 30 Rock, I call him and I give him a rundown of like everything that happened. I'm like, this got better towards the end. Like mm-hmm. this song should go here. I just talk him through it, and he just takes notes. And then Friday night, he puts together a first cut. I kind of like let him do his thing, and he looks through all the takes, and I trust his judgment on that, on performance and stuff. So I usually don't look through all the takes unless there's a read that I don't like. And I was like, I think we got a better one.
In what ways has your process changed? Like, are you taking more notes or like?
That's a good question. I think in the way that I just like, it just makes you like sharper. Mm-hmm. And the main thing that I've really realized from, especially from doing like College Humor stuff and this stuff, the difference is like having an audience at dress rehearsal. Cause you have to show the video like dress and.
And what time is that?
It starts at 8:00.
On Saturday.
But a lot of times your piece isn't playing until like 8:30, 9:00 or something. Mm-hmm. So you have a little bit of time, a little extra time. And then you have to go down. So you have to go down and watch it with the like producers and everything. Yeah. And you sort of like see how it does with them.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but like you kind of go down just for your piece. Just so there's like piece, a little yeah. bit of musical chairs of like, it's you.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
like Lauren and yeah. like yeah, yeah. The head writers and stuff.
Yeah. Head writers yeah. and the main producers and stuff. Yeah. And then you and the writer go down and like just kind of stand behind them like as they watch it. It's like a show and tell kind of thing. It's funny because there have been pieces that in the edit I've been like, I don't know about if this is going to go. Like not loud, but like in my head. And then you go to dress and it kills and you're like, great, we don't have to change anything. It's perfect.
Right, right.
And then there's been the opposite of that where you think you're just like laughing so hard and then you go down and you're like, oh boy.
Yeah.
Oh no. And you realize you have like a lot more work to do. Before it
and you
airs.
Have 2 hours to do
yeah,
it.
Yeah, 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 yeah. To make it like sing and like cut a bunch of stuff out of it.
Do you find that there's a difference between the dress and air audiences? Like, does it kill one time and then?
Yeah, 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 for sure. That's happened a lot.
And how do you guys do music?
What do you mean?
Like you just have a music library or a composer?
Like, yeah, there's a couple different things. There's like a music department. They compose stuff if you need it. I tend to use like the libraries and stuff because there's a lot of assistant editors there who just like really are good at digging mm-hmm. music, depending on what the piece is. But like, you know, just because the music department, they have like a process and they're working on like live sketches. Like sometimes mm-hmm. you have to chase them down a little bit because they're so busy. And I just like having the just like clicking through stuff.
Yeah, just try it right. and then.
Yeah, yeah. try it yeah. in. But actually, there's times when there's like a really specific cue, and I'll just bring either Hal or Eli in to watch it and just be like, I think this needs like something like this. And then they just like throw it together in 20 minutes, which is great.
It's just so insane. I'm like stressed out just hearing yeah. the whole process.
Yeah, I just yeah. have a like pit in my stomach.
Yeah. So, yeah. I'm it's sweating. Definitely like nothing. No other way I've ever worked before or ever will, because it's just so specific to you. It's the right. needs of the show.
And then equipment wise, do you usually have like the same package? Like you always have like a dolly and a Steadicam or Technocam?
No,
what
like,
do you have?
It's usually the cameras are always usually Alexa, unless it's like something specific. Like we did a reality show thing and just got like Canon
C300.
Yeah,
or
yeah. But we usually shoot on Alexa. The lenses always change. The dolly and Steadicam, if you need it usually, but we usually do crane. We just shot with a drone, which is fun.
Oh, that's fun.
And so each unit, you all kind of have the same thing and you all go out in one day and
shoot. Everyone has the same experience that I do for the most part. You can get whatever you want within reason. Like, you just have to justify why. Not at the extent that you usually have to.
Right.
Like on a show that's not this one, like if you want a crane, I feel like there would be like a meeting about it or something at like a regular show.
Right.
Or they're just like,
or you'd lose. It'd be like, okay, yeah, you get your crane today, right, but that, you know, you're sacrificing this thing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Are you sure, Paul?
Yeah. There's just no time for that. So you just have to be like, well, it was in the reference and that's what it, or like, right, you know, there's a thing happening here. Like the drone thing was possible because like in the reference that we're making fun of, it's like there's all these like drone shots. Mm-hmm. So we made it work.
Luckily. Is this something that went to air?
This was a thing that got cut, but it's online now. It's called like climate change video or something.
Oh,
like
I saw that video.
Did? Yeah, it's great. Yeah, thanks.
Yeah, super good.
I heard the drones are an issue now in Manhattan because of Trump Tower.
Yeah. Actually, it's funny. We shot in Long Island, so we were able to do a drone, but I was so mad because we had to stop by 12 because apparently Trump was golfing like close to where we were shooting. And I was just so mad. I'm like, God damn it, you son of a bitch. Like you can't get out of causing problems everywhere. But we got it all before he was golfing, so he was safe.
So what are your favorite videos that you did?
The one that I like a lot is this one with Kristen Stewart where it starts out like a commercial parody for Totino's.
Oh yeah.
And it turns into like a beautiful like lesbian
love scene,
like short film thing. That was really fun because it was like it did well and it was like with the host and also I got to like just do more fun,
do
like
some
cinematic
weird
things, like mm-hmm. more, make it more like a movie, which is really fun.
Doesn't it like start like 16:9 and it goes anamorphic or something?
Yeah. We started with like normal primes and then just at some part we just cut to anamorphic lenses and like all these like beautiful lens flares and like different lighting and stuff. So that was really fun. Then I did this one. This is actually my second thing I did of my first year. It was like, it was called Kellyanne Conway's Day Off.
Oh yeah.
It was like her relaxing. And then like, she keeps getting calls that like Trump is doing something. And that was like a really big,
that was like very popular in the news, right?
Yeah. And it was just a very big shoot for my second week. And it was fun. I was
like, I'm shooting SNL.
Yeah.
Right? Like Kate McKinnon is doing Kellyanne Conway.
Yeah.
And I've got this whole crew.
Yeah. And it was like all these locations and, it's just like a very large scope kind of scale, I guess.
This is like a real dumb broad question, but like, what do you like the most about it? Is it the pace? Is it the, you know?
That's a good question. It's kind of a funny like experience because when you're doing it, you don't really have time to be like, this is really fun. Because mm-hmm. you're just right. So busy and so focused.
Mm-hmm.
And speedy and,
right, you're like
and culturally
like
that's
tunnel
kind of
vision.
That's the whole
tunnel
thing.
Vision. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, we're the all here
world.
To focus.
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
Yeah. But I think that my favorite thing I'm starting to realize is just like the level of artistry and like standards there is so high.
Mm-hmm.
That's really what I love so much. Like I love working for a show that just demands you to be your best.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're not, they notice quickly and they can feel it. So I think everyone just has to be like such a high work ethic. And I think that breeds like really skilled people.
Mm-hmm.
Just like everyone is just the best at their craft, which is cool. And I kind of like being around that. Like the makeup people, it's like a small team of people right. who like make these things. And they're amazing. And like they just care so much. And I did this thing with Melissa McCarthy, like where she was like Sean Spicer, like on her podium.
Oh, right. Where she's going through New York.
Yeah. I played a dress. And then the head makeup guy, this guy Louis, called the office and he was like, hey, there's two shots here where you can see a little bit of the crease of her wig. Is there anything you can do? Like, everyone's just so focused. And I'm like, wow, like he's so busy. Like, when did he see that?
How
did he see that?
And so did they VFX the
We like cleaned it up. Yeah.
I mean, when I was at the taping, literally the cue card people were the most impressive people I've ever seen in
That's
my life.
That's what's so cool. Just like this really well-oiled machine of people who do the best job when they're there. And the standards for themselves and for the others is so high. And I've worked on things that's not the case, mm-hmm. and that I don't like that at all. Like, yeah. I need to work at a place where people are just obsessed with being great. Perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's like my dream is to, like, to me, when people are arguing on set, that's like a good thing. Mm-hmm. Because it means you're like debating.
He cares so much. Yeah.
The worst is like when someone's like, yeah, whatever, as long it's as it, you don't go over budget, or as long as there's no OT.
Sure. Yeah.
Like, right. Okay, but this isn't an OT question. Yeah. This is
like a
should we make this awesome
holistic,
or
bad? Yeah. And I think that breeds something that's really addicting. And also, like, the fact, like, this isn't just because of, from my perspective, but just like no one really says no there ever. Mm-hmm. If a writer or something is like on Thursday at like 8 and we're shooting Friday at like 6 in the morning, if a writer's like, I think we need to, I don't know, just make some crazy thing.
This
like,
needs to be at the top of the Empire State Building.
Yeah. Like, you don't say no. You really try to figure it out and try to find the best thing to do. Because your instinct, I guess, maybe a normal person would just be like, are you insane? Like, what are you talking about? That's crazy. Right. But like, you just, no one is... The rule, I think, the unspoken rule is just like, you can't say that.
Right. The whole thing is insane. Crazy.
Yeah.
What are you doing here then? Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a bad plan.
Yeah.
But like, it's worked for 30 years.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. It's just like always worked and it's always crazy and people are worried we're never going to do it, but it always happens. So that's what I like about it a lot.
Man, what a rush.
Yeah. Yeah.
I feel like I'm high off of this right now. I was like real worried and now I'm ready.
You just amped.
I'm just super so amped. Yeah.
Well, obviously we can keep asking you questions for like another 2 hours, but I think we need to get into our unpaid endorsements.
I think we do.
Unpaid endorsements.
This is two on point. Live from New York, which is the oral history of SNL, is kind of literally my favorite book. I find myself revisiting it often.
It's really, I haven't seen the new one in college. I like read that one from front to back. It's so interesting.
Who wrote it?
Everyone. It's like an oral history kind of thing.
Tom Shales and James Andrew Miller, but it's all excerpts from different cast members from the entire series and then also like a lot of prominent hosts and producers and things like that as well.
Yeah.
Even executives and stuff.
Yeah, it's really well made.
Yeah.
It's really interesting.
And I think they do update it. Like, I think when it first came out, it wasn't, it kind of ends around like the Tina Fey era, but obviously there's quite a bit more.
It is cool. It's like a text.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like a weird, like, scripture thing to it. It's just like everything.
Paul, you got anything?
It's a movie. I don't know how to pronounce it, but it's a new Noah Baumbach movie, The Meyerowitz Stories.
Oh, yeah.
It's really good. Yeah. It's Dustin Hoffman, Adam Sandler, a lot of really good people. It's really, really good. I mean, it is like the most like Noah Baumbach-y type of movie because it's like about like Upper West Side family and like one of their like artists and stuff. But it was just really, really, really funny. And the performances are amazing.
I guess there's more heart to it than some of his other movies.
Yeah. Right? Like a lot of his other movies are colder and they're like a little just funny and like kind of dialogue
meaner people.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
More spiteful.
And this movie is more about like people who are still kind of cold, but really have this like warmth buried inside of them. And it's really on Ben Stiller's in it too. And he's really,
have you
good.
Seen it?
I haven't. No.
Oh,
it's really good. It's in theaters.
I was listening to a podcast about it.
Cool. Yeah. I'm going to check that out.
Yeah. It's good.
Well, so my endorsement is just like a strategy that I've been thinking about a lot lately. Like a lot of times when you are trying to get an audition or a job or a new agent or a manager, you basically write to people and you ask them if they'll consider you. I guess like if you want let's say your manager to pitch you on a job or something, mm-hmm. something that I've found helpful, and this is something that my wife is now kind of looking for a new agent, and this is something I told her to do and it's been working well, is like when you reach out to your manager and say, hey, maybe you can get me a meeting with an agent, I'll a lot of times just give them a sample paragraph of how I would pitch me if I was them.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Like basically do the work for them.
Use the copy and paste version.
Oh, that's smart. Yeah.
And I just, the Swiffer job I'm doing, like, I'm sure no one will listen to this, but the producer was like, just let me know what you want me to tell the client when I'm pitching you. And I just wrote a paragraph in her voice.
Right.
And she's like, oh, great. I just copy and paste that and I got the job.
That's,
I mean,
great.
Not that it was like a hard job to get necessarily, but
yeah.
But you a lot of times know how to pitch you better than anyone else, because you are intimately aware of like what people should watch and especially what people shouldn't watch.
And what specifically is, you know, akin to the thing that they're, that you're pitching on in the first place. No one else has the back catalog and the memory that you do.
Most people don't know that you have a sloth on in your background, but it's, you know, Coyote Shoot might be, you know.
That's true,
And I always say like, hey, here's like how I would pitch myself in case it's helpful. Obviously, feel free you're not to ignore
saying,
this.
You're not saying like, this is what you say.
Right.
Because that would be like kind of weird. But you're like, giving it to them if they need it and not if they don't.
Yeah.
That's cool.
And then also have like a friend read it, because a lot of times people might be able to like help you make it sound you know, not cocky, but also they're better at like identifying the best parts of you.
You are bragging a little bit, and that's hard for people to do, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
But you do need to just be like, hey, these are the reasons why I'm right for
this
job.
Right for this, yeah.
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 That's cool. You got it. That's a good example.
Yeah.
That you like got that job and did it.
Yeah. I think it's, I don't know, I've just lately been thinking a lot about like how people present other people, because you can present an actor as like someone who hasn't done a lot of work and they're not in anything that you've heard of, or you can present them as someone that just wrote this movie and it's financed by this company and they're going to direct it next month and they have this and their play is there and they host this
just
UCB
shining a light
thing, improv
on the and shining a light on the important things and like choosing to leave the other stuff.
Sure. Well, anyone can put themselves down, right? Like you'd be like, well, this guy's a loser who records a podcast in a crappy apartment.
Or even like finding like it's a, you know, like I do an improv show at UCB every month. It's like you get to say UCB and people that don't know what that means think it's like impressive, right?
Yeah.
It is impressive,
though. It is,
I know what it is and it's impressive.
Well, but as opposed to saying, well, I was on this web show that you've never heard of.
Right.
I think when you're pitching yourself, it's just really important to give the people that need to repitch you to other people like the tools to
give
do
them
it.
The the answers. Yeah.
Well, Paul, how can we find out more about you? Do you still own pauljbriganti.com?
Yeah, I do. Pauljbriganti.com.
Cool.
Click it. I'm on Instagram. Paul Briganti.
Are you on Snapchat?
I don't think so. I might be.
Cool. Well, you can follow us on Instagram at justshootitpod. Check out our show notes for all the stuff that we talked about. We'll post some of Paul's sketches and also all of our endorsements at justshootitpod.com. You can follow me at Mr. Matt Enlow.
And me at Smitey Pyleg. And you can follow the show at justshootitpod. And send us an email with any questions. Leave us a review on iTunes or just rate us.
This episode was edited by me.
And the music is provided by the Free Music Archive and the artist Jazar. And our webmaster is Ewan Williams.
Ewan.
Thanks, Ewan. We'll see you guys next time.
Thanks, guys. Bye.
Bye.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Want your most burning finance and investing questions answered? Here's a podcast you should be listening to, courtesy of Acast Recommends.
Are you ready for some personality in your personal finances? Hi, I'm Janice Torres Rodriguez, Latina money expert and host of the award-winning podcast, Yo Quiero Dinero. On this show, we're serving up POC-friendly personal finance knowledge, always with a side of sass. We're not talking about avocado toast and lattes on this show. We've got real, relatable personal finance knowledge that makes you feel seen, heard, and finally understood. Consider me your super cool, slightly risque, but always honest financial fairy godmother. Together, we'll tackle dinero in a fresh new way so you can finally become poderosa with your dinero. Check out our weekly podcast episodes at YoQuieroDineroPodcast.com or subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.